And that persistence was reinforced in a way, the persistence of a partition ending for a colonial undertaking was reinforced in a certain sense by the United Nations in 1947 when it decided that Palestine should be divided between a Jewish and a Palestinian nation or Arab nation, and giving 55% of the territory of that mandated Palestine to the emerging Jewish state and 45% to the never-to-be-realized Palestinian state. And as is well known, it was the Arabs that repudiated that arrangement, and many commentators have said that proved that they were not prepared to accept a reasonable arrangement. But again, if you think about the 20th century, it was all about decolonization and self-determination. So it wasn't so unreasonable in that historical context to think that this European-imposed solution was not consistent with the will of the people who were inhabiting the territory and the region. Of course, as matters have worked out, the Palestinians would be probably delighted to get a state that corresponded with that original 45%. Because now, and this is again not appreciated sufficiently, what is understood under the umbrella of the two-state solution is not 45%, but 22% of the original Palestinian mandate. And one doesn't appreciate that the Palestinians, through their leadership going back to 1988, accepted this enormous reduction in their share of what was Palestine. And they have never been given credit for the notion of saying, we will live peacefully and accept the reality of Israel, provided we can have an equivalent sovereign state in that 22% of the original mandate. And that 22% is what is now called occupied Palestinian territory. It is what was occupied in the 1967 war, the West Bank and Gaza Strip and Jerusalem, East Jerusalem. And so our sense of what is a fair solution really has to take some account, if it's to be at all oriented toward reality, in that this historical background and the sense that rather than pushing the Israelis into the sea, the real story has been the Palestinians being pushed into the desert. So that they have had to claim less and less, and now they're expected. And for instance, during the Bush presidency, Bush wrote, I doubt that he actually wrote himself, but someone not significantly more intelligent wrote this letter to Ariel Sharon, promising that Israel could maintain the unlawful settlement blocks that it had established in this 22% this 22% remnant of the original Palestinian mandate. And now we have the experience where that settlement incursion on this Palestinian remnant has continued to expand and expand and to bisect the West Bank in ways that have made life for daily life for every Palestinian a real horrible ordeal just to get where you work and study to where you live, or if you need to go to a hospital, or you need to do it, it's the struggle for daily existence in the West Bank, which is considered the more moderate form of Israeli occupation, is something that I think very few people could survive without falling into despair. And that, and this is dramatically worse for the 1.5 million people living in Gaza, who are essentially locked into what has been called quite often the largest open-air prison in the world. And it has to be recalled that during the Gaza war, the civilian population of one of the most crowded areas in the world was not allowed to leave the combat zone, even though 53% of the Gazan population are children. It's one of the first times in modern warfare that the option to become a refugee was denied to a civilian population. That is not explicit. It, I think, didn't enter the legal imagination of those who formulated international humanitarian law and the Geneva Conventions. But it deserves to be a distinct war crime to deny the civilian population an opportunity to leave an intense combat zone. And we don't realize, I think, that we measure the war, the impact of the war, by the people that were killed and wounded, the casualties. But from my understanding, every person in Gaza was a casualty of that war. The level of so-called post-traumatic stress experienced when you're trapped in a war zone where modern weaponry is being used 24 hours a day for 22 days. The psychological capacity to survive that kind of experience hasn't been tested, but one, from what we do know, it is extremely there's extreme evidence of widespread mental disorder, a variety of indications of psychological adverse psychological effects. And one doesn't also fully appreciate the extent to which, from the time that Hamas took over the governmental authority in Gaza, the whole population has been subject to a blockade in which food, fuel, and medicine have been allowed to enter only at subsistence or subsistence levels, which have again produced a number of long-term effects, including reports that child anemia affects 43% of the children, acute child anemia affects 43% of the children. There's also an epidemic of child deafness in Gaza as a result of the sonic booms that are frequent experiences resulting from Israeli overflights that are have been almost daily for quite a long period of time. So the occupation has, if you think about it, has gone on since 1967. It's the longest occupation we know about. And at some point, there is a... there should be some kind of sense that occupation that is so prolonged destroys the social and political fabric of a society. The people are not allowed to leave. They're not allowed to keep contact with relatives and friends. This is particularly true again of the people locked into Gaza. But we have no real understanding of what it means to be subject to this kind of prolonged occupation. And it is, I think, it should be seen as a humanitarian catastrophe unfolding before our eyes that we are spectators to, passive spectators at best, or complicit in maintaining this regime of occupation at worst. And one could say a lot more about it, but I won't say anything more except that that it's characterized by several policies that are flagrant violations of international humanitarian law. The maintenance of this siege or blockade is a form of collective punishment explicitly prohibited by Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. The construction of the settlements is explicitly prohibited by Article 49, Paragraph 6, that disallows an occupying power to transfer any of its population to the occupied territory.